The first one, he's asking, what is the primordial envy of the jiva that was discussed in the Bhagavad Sandarbha, or maybe overview of Tattva Sandarbha, which caused the jiva to turn away from the spiritual world, leaving Krishna's association? Is it in any way similar to the Christian viewpoint of original sin? Well, it's not. It's not. The word sin is a Christian word. And we have the Sanskrit term papa, which, for lack of a better word in English, Prabhupada did translate as sin. But it's really not the same idea. The Christian idea is that the first man disobeyed a specific order from God. Don't eat that apple. And because of that, we are all sinful. In Adam's fall, we sinned all. That is not our philosophy, that one person is responsible for everybody's sins. Our philosophy is that everybody is individual, and we all have come to this world because of some problem in our relationship with Krishna. To remain in the spiritual world, you have to be completely submissive to Krishna being the supreme controller and the supreme enjoyer. All it takes is a little bit of rebellion, a little bit of wrong attitude, to make you disqualified for remaining in the spiritual world. That's all. Far as I understand, that's all our primeval envy or original sin is. It's just deciding that we're not really convinced that Krishna should be the supreme controller and enjoyer. We'd like to try to take some of that control and enjoyment for ourselves. And it's individual, and it's also forgotten. None of us remember, and none of us probably can remember, the original rebellion we had against Krishna. It's beyond our memory. So there's not much more I can say about it. Then, about Jiva Goswami denying that the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam are discussed specifically in one canto after another. Maybe from the 3rd to the 12th canto, letting the 1st and 2nd canto just count as introduction. Jiva Goswami rejects this proposal. But then I'm asked, why did Srila Prabhupada... It seems that Srila Prabhupada, by putting the title creation for the first canto, sub-creation for the second, and so on, means that the first 10 cantos of Bhagavatam speak about the 10 topics. Srimad Bhagavatam, from Swarga to Ashraya, each topic respectively for each canto. Is what is established in the Tattva Sandarbha? Well, this is not. It's not in agreement with what's said in... that idea is not in agreement with what is said in the Tattva Sandarbha. All I can presume is that Prabhupada is not intentionally disagreeing with Jiva Goswami, that he's assigning some titles to the volumes for dramatic effect, for poetic effect, and I don't think he meant that seriously, that it should be taken exactly literally, that these are the topics, of each canto. It's obvious in many of the cases that they aren't. I don't see in here a real disagreement between Prabhupada and Jiva Goswami. Just Prabhupada is, as he often is, being poetical and not so much pedantic. Okay? All right, so we proceed with Anuchet 3 of Bhagavad Sandarbha.
Okay. Text 3.
Evam chananda matram visheshyam samastat shaktayo visheshanani vishishto bhagavan ityayatam tatai tata chaivam vaishishtye prapte purn avir bhava twain akanda tattva rupo sau bhagavan brahma tu sputam aprakatita vaishishtyakara twaina tasyaiv asamyag avir bhava ityayatam idam tu purato vistarena vivechaniyam. Translation: on the basis of this much, we can say that the basic entity which is to be qualified is the pure essence of ecstasy. Its qualification, well, okay, the word is visheshya and then visheshanani. The verb, Sanskrit verb, well, before I get into this, let's just remember what the context. We have, Jiva Goswami has defined for us the three different concepts of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. They are all, we say, aspects of the same absolute truth. But Jiva Goswami is emphatically saying that they're the same. They're just different ways of looking at the same absolute truth. According to the capacity of a meditator or worshiper, he may see the absolute truth in one of these three forms. That's his limitation. It's not any distinction, actually, or difference in the absolute truth. Okay, now we're talking in terms of visheshya and visheshanam. There is the verb vishish. What does it mean? What does shish mean by itself? What does vishish mean? To distinguish, to make a difference, to create a difference, or to identify a difference. So there's the past passive participle of that, vishishta. There is the potential participle, visheshya. So that which is there and is going to be distinguished, is going to be divided up into parts, or distinguish from something else, that's the visheshya. The absolute truth is the visheshya, Brahman, especially when we look at him in his undistinguished form, Brahman. We can call him the visheshya, that which is which has distinctions, but we're looking at him without his distinctions. And then, what are the word visheshanam? That can be considered karanavacha, describing the instrument. That by which distinction is done is a visheshana. Of course, you have the word the grammatical term visheshana, and what does it mean? Adjective, more generally modifier, not just adjective. An adverb is a kriya visheshana. A noun can be a visheshanam of another noun as an apposition. So visheshanam, adjectives are just one kind of visheshanam. And of course, there's visheshanams outside of grammar. An entity is distinguished by its qualities. The qualities are visheshanams. But here we say that the visheshanams of the absolute truth are all of its energies. That's the visheshanas. And then, looking at the entity with his visheshanams, he's the vishishta, that which is distinguished. We have the term vishishta-dvaita that's used to simply describe the philosophy of Ramanujacharya, that he's talking about one absolute truth, but an absolute truth that has distinguished qualities. Now let's look at the translation. On the basis of this much, we can say that the basic entity which is to be qualified, that's the Vishesha, is the pure essence of ecstasy. Well, that's a definition of Brahman that the Mayavadis would accept. Anandamatram. He's pure, the absolute truth is pure ecstasy. And therefore, all the Mayavadi sannyasis are this Ananda and that Ananda. Okay, what is he talking about? No, he's, you know, he, no, that's finished. The Ananda is finished. Oh, in the verse? They do? Okay. Can I make a note of that? I didn't take it like that. Okay. Well, okay, fine. Anyway, let's just read the translation. On the basis of this much, we can say that the basic entity which is to be qualified, the Visheshya, is the pure essence of ecstasy. And that phrase comes from the verse that was discussed in the previous Anuchet. Its qualifications, its Visheshanas, are all of that essence's energies. And the complete qualified whole is Bhagawan, the personality of Godhead. I mean, what's the difference between the Visheshya and the Vishishta? Really none. It's just when you look at the whole, abstract it from all its qualities and just try to see the essence of it without the qualities, that's, you can call that the Visheshya. And when you add to your vision all the qualities, then you're looking at the Vishishta. But really, the Visheshya and the Vishishta are the same. Actually, the absolute truth is never devoid of qualities. He doesn't exist in the abstract apart from his qualities. It's just our vision. Okay, going back to the translation. Since Bhagawan is thus possessed of qualification, he is in fact the fully manifest and complete absolute truth. Brahman, however, appears without clearly perceivable qualifications. And therefore, it is his incomplete manifestation. This we will elucidate in detail later on. We say in the commentary when this is going to be later on. I try to be specific. When there's a reference to this will happen later, I try to, in the commentary, tell you. When there's references to things that were said before, I try to remind the reader in the commentary, you know, when it was said before. When there's brief references to verses just by one or two words, I give the whole verse. So in the Bhagavad Sandarbha, because there's so much going on, so many references to what happened before, what happened, what's going to be said later, and verses just referred to very briefly by one word. So I fill in. I try to help keep the reader oriented by supplying the information that Jiva Goswami assumes we know. And therefore, I'm commenting in the Bhagavad Sandarbha on every part of every Anuchet. 3.1 gets its own commentary. And here it is. Commentary. The terms Visheshya, Visheshana, and Vishishta can be traced back to the oldest Sanskrit texts on linguistics and metaphysics. All three words are derived from the verb vishish, to differentiate or specify. A thing which needs to be made specific is called visheshya. Just like we're studying something and we haven't found out everything about it. There's a big animal outside. Okay, how big is it? Does it have sharp teeth? You know, does it have horns? Yeah, so I send you out. I won't go out. I'll send you out to get more information. So we have the Vishishya. We need to know the Visheshanams. A thing which needs to be made specific is called Visheshya. For example, a rose. The specifying quality, for example, the rose is pink, the rose's pink color is called Visheshana and distinguishes the thing from others, as the pink rose is different from roses of other colors. The qualified thing is called Vishishta. In this case, the pink rose. If I just knew there's a rose, you know, get me a rose. Yes, I got you a rose. Here's the bill. But I haven't seen it yet, so it's still for me just a Vishishya. I don't know which color it is. I can find out, but before I find out, it's unspecified. When it's specified, then I have the Vishishta. I discover, even though I didn't specify it, that I ended up with a pink rose. The absolute truth, continuing, the absolute truth viewed as the unqualified essence of ecstasy, Ananda Matra, is Visheshya. All of the absolute's qualities are his Visheshanas. And as the personality of Godhead, he is the fully qualified Vishishta. Actually, the Supreme is never without his qualities, but some conditioned souls may fail to perceive them, and so consider him unqualified. More properly, however, even his mere existence is a real quality. Okay, he just exists, or he's just ecstasy, but these are qualities. Even to exist is a quality. And his negative qualities, including his being without beginning or end in time and space, and his imperceptibility, are qualities nonetheless. The Vedanta Sutra 1.2.21 states, sutras state, Adwisha Twadi Gunako Dharmok Teh. The invisibility and so on of the Supreme are real qualities of his. Since in the same texts that affirm these negative qualities, many other positive qualities are also ascribed to him. Dharmokte. Because in the same place where it says he's not this, he's not that, it says that he is something else, and he is that, this and that. So there is dharmokti. There is description in the same shruti of real qualities. So therefore, these negative qualities, they're also real qualities. You know, we say something is lacking in softness. It's not soft. Well, that's the same thing as saying it's hard. So anything that you say negatively could be said otherwise in positive terms, and vice versa. So the negative qualities are also qualities. Continuing, as will be further clarified later in the Bhagavad Sandarbha, 87 to 88. That's where we're going to hear it. Not very soon. The concept of formless Brahman is therefore only an incomplete realization of the same absolute truth who is known more completely as Paramatma and Bhagavan. So we're beginning our task of explaining what is Bhagavan. But first of all, we have to explain why there are three different concepts. What's this other concepts of Brahman and Paramatma, and what's special about Bhagavan that gives it a different name? Okay. Now we're just up to 3.2. Bhagavat Shabdartas Cha Vishnu Purani Prokta. The meaning of the word Bhagavan is stated in Sri Vishnu Purana. This is in the fifth chapter of the sixth canto of the Vishnu Purana. which is near the end of the Vishnu Purana. There's only six cantos, six amshas in the Vishnu Purana. Anyway, here's a long passage about the meaning of the word Bhagavan. Yantadavyaktamajadam achintyam ajam akshayam anirdeshiyam arupam cha pani padadya samyutam vibhum sarvagatam nityam bhutayoni makaranam vyapya vyapyam yatak sarvam tadvai pashyanti surayaha tad brahma paramam dhamma tadyeyam mokshakankshinaham shudivakyoditam sukshmam tadvishno paramam padam taretad bhagavadvachyam swarupam paramatmanah vachako bhagavachabdas tasyadyas yakshadatmanah. There's more, but translation of that is, the absolute truth is unmanifested, unaging, inconceivable, these are all negative qualities, inconceivable, unborn, and inexhaustible. He cannot be described and has no form, no arms, legs, or other parts. He is all-powerful, present everywhere, and eternal, the causeless womb of all creation. He is all-pervading, but nothing else pervades him. From him arises all existence. Liberated saints realize him. Because I'm saying him, it's really a neuter words that are being used in the verse. Tud. It sounds so far, except for the he's, which are my translation, the he's and the hims, sounds like description of impersonal absolute truth, Brahman, so far. But let's continue. And he says in the next sentence, he is Brahman, the supreme abode, the object of meditation of those who desire liberation. He is the subtle truth described in the words of the Shruti as that supreme position of Vishnu. Well, Mayavadi would like to make the supreme position of Vishnu impersonal. So, okay. But then he says, designated Bhagavan. Okay, he's called Brahman, but he has the name Bhagavan. Designated Bhagavan. He is the original self of the Paramatma. The word Bhagavan describes him as the primeval, infallible, supreme soul. Okay, this is some sort of basic definition of Bhagavan that even the Mayavadis can accept. All these things are true, but they don't deal with his personality or even his positive qualities. Still, that's the absolute truth. That's Bhagavan. And there's more in this passage. It's not the end of it. Jiva Goswami chose this as explanation of the word Bhagavan. So ityad yuktva, having said that much, it continues. Sambarteti, this is Parashara Rishi speaking. Sambarteti tatabarta pakarorto dvayanvitaha neta gamayita shrashta kakarartas tatamuni aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashashakshriyaha jnana vairagya yoschapi shannam baka itingana vasanti tatra bhutani bhutatmanya kilatmani sacha bhutesh vasheshu vakarartas tatovyayaha. Now we're explaining the word Bhagavan by analyzing it syllable by syllable. This is not a standard grammatical technique to explain the meaning of a word by explaining the meaning of the syllables. Panini doesn't do that. But Yaskamuni in the Nirukta, older book, I think older than Panini, he suggests this is one way to explain the meaning of words, is to explain the separate meanings of the syllables. You can do that. In some cases it works. Anyway, that's the opinion of Yaska. And whether the grammarians will accept that as scientific or not, still, acharyas very often do it, and maybe they're just doing it poetically. They're not intending that it's meant to be the actual derivation of the word, but they're just poetically explaining it syllable by syllable. Anyway, that's what Parashara Rishi is doing here. These verses should be familiar. The second verse is Prabhupada quotes very often, and the other two are there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Okay, so I'll give you the translation. After saying this, the Purana continues. The syllable ba carries the two ideas of complete maintainer and master. That in Sanskrit is sambarta and barta, which I translated as complete maintainer and master. Ga means the gamayata and srashta, which I translate as ga means leader, propeller, and creator. I have three words there. What? Neta, yeah. Neta, gamayata, srashta. Three words. I translate as leader, propeller, and creator. O sage. Bhaga indicates the six assets of, that's the famous verse, Bhaga indicates the six assets of all controlling power, all physical strength, all fame, all opulence, all knowledge, and all renunciation. So that's not a definition of Bhagawan, that's a definition of Bhaga. We've only put two syllables together so far. The syllable va, Bhagava, it signifies that all created beings reside in him. Vasati. Vas stands for vasati. The soul of all living, all created beings reside within him. The soul of all living beings and of everything that exists. And then also he personally resides within all living beings. Thus the absolute truth is inexhaustible. Okay, then there's more in that passage in the fifth chapter of the sixth canto of the Vishnu Purana. Parashara says, having said that, iti choktva, jnana shakti balaishvarya viryate jamsya sheshataha bhagavat chabda vachyani vina heyayir gunadibihi iti paryantena. After saying this, finally, the Purana states, the term Bhagawan indicates complete knowledge, sensory strength, physical strength, controlling power, supernatural influence, and radiant beauty, to the exclusion of all qualities and other attributes which are inferior. So that's within the same section spoken by Parashara, the same about 20 verses. And he's listing the six bhagas again, but differently. It's a different list. And he says, the word Bhagawan indicates complete, having all these things completely. Now the commentary. The passage cited here from the Vishnu Purana defines the Supreme in terms of his distinguishing qualities, similar to the way the definition of cow as a four-legged animal with a dewlap is adequate to distinguish cows from everything else, even though the definition does not say everything worth knowing about cows. The same Supreme is identified as impersonal Brahman, and then also as the Supersoul and Personality of Godhead. The first verse specifies negative qualities, and the next mentions two pairs of apparently contradictory negative and positive qualities. Well, let's see. First verse says, he's avyakta ajara, achintya aja, akshayam, all negative things. And then the second mentions qualities, some positive and some negative qualities. He's vibhu, he's sarvagata, he's nitya, but then he's akarana, he's vyapi, he's all-pervading, but nothing pervades him. So both negative and positive qualities in the second verse. And the next verse mentions two pairs of apparently contradictory negative and positive qualities. After this, it is said that the Brahman, which the Upanishads and other Shrutis speak so much about, is non-different from Paramatma and Bhagavan. The later verses, cited from the same chapter of Vishnu Purana, are part of an extended idea of Bhagavan. In Sarvasamvadini, Srila Jiva Goswami has incorporated his own commentary on the entire passage from which the verses cited here have been extracted. And that is Vishnu Purana 6.5, verses 59 to 87. Not all of those were quoted here, but Jiva Goswami is going to deal with that whole section in the Sarvasamvadini, which we should look at right now. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Is it a question? Okay. It's not a question. Okay. I think so. At least the first one. This whole thing.
Yeah. But he doesn't claim the God as God. Uh-huh. 2.10.
Now this is curious. That explanation of that passage in Vishnu Purana is not under the heading of text 3. There is nothing for text 3. It must come later on. So let's leave it for later when we get to it. But I gave a cross-reference. Let's see where it shows up. And Sarvasamvadini Shilika has incorporated his own commentary on the whole passage. That may take a little time to find because we have 8 files of the Sarvasamvadini here. I don't want to have to meet right now, sit down and look at all 8. Anyway, we'll put that aside for now and read it when we come to it, when we come to the verse that it's commenting on. Purvavad atra cha vishesha visheshana vishishtata vivechaniya. Visheshana siyapi aheyatvam vyakti bhavishyati iti arubam panipad adya samyutam itidam brahmakya kevala visheshya avyubhava nishtam aishvarasya samagvasya ityadikam kevala visheshana nishtam vibhum bhagavad ityadikam tu vishishta nishtam. This is interesting. So Jiva Goswami, he was talking before, at the beginning of the Anuchet, about Visheshya, Visheshana, and Vishishta. Now he's going to apply those 3 terms to the passage quoted from the Vishnu Purana. As we did above, here also we can analyze separately the aspects of the essential entity which is to be described. Its qualifications, and the qualified hold. In other words, the Vishesha, the Visheshana, and the Vishishta. Later we will show that the Supreme's qualifications are also free from defects. I hope in the commentary I identify where later. His being described as formless and as lacking hands, feet, and so on is in reference to the unqualified conception of the essential entity appearing with the name Brahman. That was in the Vishnu Purana passage. Can someone quote it? Okay. Yeah, so those words are there. And that's referring to the unqualified conception of the essential entity appearing with the name Brahman. This is explaining things. The passage starts by talking in terms of Brahman, and then it switches to talking about personality of Godhead. Then continuing, the ideas of all-controlling influence and so on. Where is that? Aishwarasya samagrasya. Well, that Aishwarasya samagrasya, virasya. Okay, the ideas of controlling influence and so on refer to the Supreme's qualifications considered separately, because it's talking about the visheshanas, not about the whole vishishta. It's talking about the qualities of Bhagavan, the bhagas. And then the indications of his being all-powerful and the personality of Godhead refer to the qualified whole, the vishishta. Now, where does it talk about, where are the words vibhum bhagavan, bhagavad? That should be after the Aishwarya.
No, it's, well, it jumps around. The first verse is a vibhum.
Yeah, that's the negative qualities.
And the second verse is vibhum. Oh, there's a vibhum there also.
Where's the second vibhum? Oh, okay, let me help you. Yeah, what else does he read the whole thing first? Vibhum sarvagatam vyapi. Vyapiam, which verse is that? And which, that verse, before or after the Aishwarya Hissamagrasya? After, okay. So that's the verse, that verse describes the Vishishta. The Bhagavan with his qualities. Yes?
Before.
Okay, anyway, that verse describes Bhagavan with his qualities, even if it comes before. The complete whole, the Vishishta. Okay. Atava, or explaining it a different way. Arupam ityadikam prakrita rupadi nisheda nishtam. Ata eva pani padadya samyutam iti samyoga sambandha eva parivrihyate natu samavaya sambandha iti geyam. Well, let's see. Or we can analyze this in a different way. The statements of the Supremes being formless and so on are meant to negate the possibility of his having material form and other qualities. Thus the phrase lacking hands, feet, and so on, denies connection by simple contact, but not the integral connection of inherence. The Lord has his integral arms and legs, but he doesn't have arms and legs that are attached by some glue or muscles or something. So there's no relationship by simple connection, because he doesn't have separate parts. Still, there's variety. He does have his hands and his other limbs, but they're all non-different from the whole. So there's samavaya, but not some yoga connection. I can build a doll by gluing the head on top of the torso, but that's not how you build the body of God. All-powerful, continuing, all-powerful means endowed with all opulences. Present everywhere means not limited. All-pervading means underlying all things. And not pervaded means that no other entity can pervade him. That's the Vishishta, Bhagavan. Commentary. This commentary for each separate section of the Anuchedas throughout the Bhagavad Sandarbha. So they're short commentaries. Samyoga and Samavaya are terms of the Vaisheshika school of metaphysics. And they are meant to represent two varieties of the relationship of connection. The integral connection of a whole with its components is called samavaya, or inherence. A cloth is said to inhere in the threads from which it is made. And a forest is said to inhere in the trees, which are its parts. Qualities and movements inhere in substantial things. According to the proponents of Vaisheshika theory, the thread, the forest, the particular pink color of a certain rose, and so on, can only exist as long as what they inhere in also exists. The thread doesn't adhere in a cloth, it's the other way around. What inheres in them? Not that the threads inhere in the cloth. The threads are physically inside the cloth and they're touching each other. But the cloth is inhering in the threads. It's a one-way relationship. The cloth can't exist without the threads. The threads can't exist without the cloth. I can pull all the threads apart and use them for something else. But I can't destroy the threads and expect to still have the cloth. I'm going to say, is it what they inhere in or what inheres in them? Okay, I leave this for further consideration. Some yoga, on the other hand, is the simple connection of physical contact, like that of a bird sitting on a tree. The bird is in contact with the tree. But the bird can exist, the bird can fly away, the tree can fall down, and the bird and the tree, neither one is dependent on the other for its existence. If either the bird or the tree goes out of existence, the other can still remain. Srila Jiva applies this contrast of samavaya and samyoga to the relationship of the Supreme with his qualities. Even though he has no accidental qualities, by samyoga relationship, countless eternal qualities inhere in him. Remember, Vyasadeva, in the second chapter of the Vedanta Sutra, rejects the concept of inherence as an invalid concept. Still, we're using it. Jiva Goswami here is using it to describe the relationship between the Supreme and his qualities and his limbs. So it's a useful fiction, the idea of samavaya, even though it's already rejected by Vyasadeva. Okay, I'm going to stop here. The next section is a little long and complicated. But yeah, that was a one paragraph commentary. A lot of the commentaries in the Bhagavad Sanda are just one or two paragraphs, because I have one for every single subsection. Okay, if you have any questions, please submit them. And we'll discuss them tomorrow. Did anybody find any mistakes? Spelling mistakes or anything here? Grammar mistakes? There's some sentences I can see that should be tightened up. The English is a little awkward, but English editors have not seen it yet. Uh-huh.
Explains this concept of Vishesha, Visheshana, and Vishishta.
The problem in the Chaitanya Charitamrita?
Yeah. Well,
Adi 3, you said?
Adi.
Adi 3.
Adi 2, 10.
You want to read some of it?
Yeah, just one sentence. That's it.
Oh.
Impersonal Brahman is a partial manifestation of the truth realized in the absence of such complete... Okay, well, say. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained the word Bhagavan in his Bhagavat Sandarbha. The personality of Godhead, being full of all conceivable and inconceivable potencies, is the absolute complete whole. The impersonal Brahman is a partial manifestation of the absolute truth realized in the absence of such complete potencies. It's like referring to the Vishesha, Vishesha and Vishishta. So it's just nice to see how it's... Actually, by the study of this Sandarbha, we're going deeper into Prabhupada's purport that there.
Not everybody's going to want to read this, you can see. Yeah. This is not going to be the most popular book. But somebody has to study it, either in translation or the original, because devotees have questions about things in the Bhagavatam, things that Prabhupada said. And a lot of it's answered in the Sandarbhas. A lot of it's clarified. A lot of things are clarified. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Shri Bhagavat Sandarbha Ki Jai.